There was a table set out under a tree in front of the house, and the March Hare and the Hatter were having tea at it. A dormouse was sitting between them, fast asleep, and the other two were using it as a cushion, resting their elbows on it and talking over its head. Very uncomfortable for the dormouse, thought Alice. Only as it's asleep, I suppose it doesn't mind. The table was a large one, but the three were all crowded together at one corner of it. "No room, no room," they cried out when they saw Alice coming. "There's plenty of room," said Alice, indignantly, and she sat down in a large armchair at one end of the table. "Have some wine," the March Hare said in an encouraging tone. Alice looked all around the table, but there was nothing on it but tea. "I don't see any wine," she remarked. "There isn't any," said the March Hare. "Then it wasn't very civil of you to offer it," said Alice angrily. "It wasn't very civil of you to sit down without being invited," said the March Hare. "I didn't know it was your table," said Alice. "It's laid for a great many more than three." "Your hair wants cutting," said the Hatter. He had been looking at Alice for some time with great curiosity, and this was his first speech. "You should learn not to make personal remarks," Alice said with some severity. "It's very rude." The Hatter opened his eyes very wide on hearing this, but all he said was, "Why is a raven like a writing desk?" "Come, we shall have some fun now," thought Alice. "I'm glad they've begun asking riddles. I believe I can guess that," she added aloud. "Do you mean you think you can find out the answer to it?" said the March Hare. "Exactly so," said Alice. "Then you should say what you mean," the March Hare went on. "I do," Alice hastily replied. At least I mean what I say. That's the same thing, you know." "Not the same thing a bit," said the Hatter. "You might just as well say that I see what I eat is the same as I eat what I see." After bombarding Alice with more riddles and stories which make no sense, and tormenting the poor tired dormouse who just was trying to get some sleep, the conversation continues. "Have you guessed the riddle yet?" the Hatter said, turning to Alice again. "No, I give it up," Alice replied. "What's the answer?" "I haven't the slightest idea," said the Hatter. "Nor I," said the March Hare. Alice sighed wearily. Suffering even more indignations, Alice becomes exasperated and leaves the mad tea party. "At any rate, I'll never go there again," said Alice as she picked her way through the wood. "It's the stupidest tea party I ever was at in all my life." Many of you recognize this as the Mad Tea Party from Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. As a child, I was never interested in Alice's adventures. And as a teen, even though Jabberwocky was popular among many of my peers, I never understood Carroll's nonsensical beast. Carroll's brilliance isn't lost on me. I just don't understand his writing. Although as of late, his literature of nonsense seems timely. If I want to speak intelligently on Carroll's works, I would need to turn to an instructor, someone with an interest and understanding of his logic and wordplay, someone who has read and studied his works, someone to help me understand. Many people look at the Christian faith the way I look at the writings of Lewis Carroll. To them, Jesus' command to take up the cross, lay down our lives, and love our enemies sounds as nonsensical as the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. Even in the church, some are confused. They too need teachers, witnesses, people with first-hand knowledge to help them understand who Christ is and what it means to live a Christian life. This is why Jesus called disciples. But as we see in the story of his transfiguration, they were often as confused as anyone. I've preached Jesus' transfiguration probably 20 times or more, and I never saw this before. I focused on the presence of Moses and Elijah, the giver of God's law and the greatest of God's prophets. I've connected the dots between Jesus' transfiguration and the passion predictions which come before and after. I've even focused on Peter's misguided plan to stay on the mountain and bask in God's glory. I've preached Jesus' transfiguration more times than I can remember, but I never saw this before. Listen to verse 6 again. He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Who didn't know what to say? Who was dumbfounded? Who was speechless? I've always thought it was Peter, and the Greek lends itself to that. Like the Mad Hatter, Peter was talking nonsense. Jesus knew it. Mark knew it. I always assumed Mark is trying to rationalize Peter's nonsense. They were terrified. Peter didn't know what he was saying. Maybe that's what's going on. But I'm not so sure anymore. What if it's Jesus who's speechless? 6 days ago, Jesus tells his disciples his time is near. He explains how everyone will reject him, the great suffering he must endure, even his crucifixion and resurrection. He's pouring his heart out when Peter rebukes him. Can you imagine how that must have hurt? Yeah, it's Jesus. But he's human. Jesus rebukes Peter, calls him Satan, and tries his luck with the crowd. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. It's almost like he's giving up on his disciples, leaving them in the dust. I would love to know what the next 6 days were like. But Jesus doesn't give up on them. 6 days later, he takes Peter, of all people, and James and John up the mountain to see Jesus' transfiguration for themselves. I've always thought the transfiguration was for Jesus' sake. Maybe to prepare him to endure what he was about to endure. A physical and spiritual manifestation that God's got this. Yes, Jesus will go through hell and back, but he's God's beloved son, and God has his back. I've always thought the transfiguration was for Jesus' sake. But now I'm not so sure. Perhaps it's for Jesus' sake, but it's also for the disciples. one last-ditch divine attempt to help them see who they're dealing with and what is being asked of them. Jesus is transfigured. His clothes become a dazzling white. Moses and Elijah appear, and Peter sticks his foot in his mouth. Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Before you accuse me of being too hard on Peter, tell me, what part of Jesus' ministry of feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, casting out demons, and eating with outcasts would make anyone think staying on the mountaintop to bask in God's glory is a good idea? This is why I believe it was Jesus who was speechless. He's done everything possible to help them see. He has to be frustrated beyond belief. God performs this minor miracle, and they still don't see. He must have been beside himself. But he saw they were terrified. What more could be said? Peter's response, their inability to see, their fear, left Jesus speechless. Cue the cloud. Just like at Jesus' baptism, the heavens open up and God speaks. This is my Son, the Beloved. Listen to him. Listen to him. What do you think God meant by that? More than we might imagine. Listening takes many forms. There's selective hearing, which seems to plague spouses. There's polite listening, waiting until someone has stopped talking so we can tell them what we think. There's reflective listening, where something grabs our attention, even inspires us. But God has more in mind. God wants the disciples, God wants us to listen to Jesus in such a way we become like Jesus. God wants us to be transfigured. God wants our lives to become the answer to Jesus' question. Who do people say that I am? Like the Mad Hatter with Alice, the disciples left Jesus speechless for the wrong reasons. They couldn't see. They couldn't show others who Jesus is. Imagine if we could leave Jesus speechless for the right reasons. Imagine if we could live in such a way that Jesus was dazzled and in awe of our transfiguration. Though I've never been a fan of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, I'm thinking of trying again. The more I watch what's going on in the world, and the more I encounter confusion in the church about who Christ is and who we're called to be, the more I feel like I've done fallen down the rabbit hole. It hasn't left me speechless, but I'll admit, sometimes I get more than a little frustrated. Margie and I watched a PBS program this week about Emmett Till. The young man whose murder for whistling at a white woman birthed the civil rights movement. I'm not sure what horrifies me more. That human beings could treat another human being that way. He was beaten beyond recognition. That human beings could treat another human being that way. Or that good white Christians could defend those monsters. I'm not talking just about the Mississippians who circled the wagon some 65 years ago. I'm talking about good white Christians today who say and believe some of the same things about people of color. That such hatred yet exists among white Christians is a demonic perversion of our faith. There is no place for it in the Church of Jesus Christ. Beloved, this is why we are a Matthew 25 congregation. This is why I address racial justice from the pulpit. This is why we have conversations around white privilege. This is why we are imploring everyone to participate in the Lenten 21-day racial justice challenge. We want to end the confusion and show the world clearly who Jesus is, God's beloved. We want to leave Jesus speechless for the right reasons. Thanks be to God.